They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hello, welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies with your titular Magellans, myself, Elliot, and yourself, Nathan.
Thanks.
Today we're going to talk exclusively and at length about the engagement between Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. Oh. Nathan, I know you're big into this, so why don't you start us off?
Yeah, excited that, you know, one of the most talented people of our generation, Travis Kelce, is finally, I was telling someone that it would be, I don't have that many friends and I don't have many friends who are Swifties, but if you texted a bunch of people saying, OMG, did you hear Travis Kelce got engaged? I feel like that's pretty funny. That's a funny thing to do. Yeah, probably, I mean, that's exciting for you, Elliot. These are two of the golden children, right, of your city, basically.
Is Taylor Swift from Kansas City?
No, but she's, like, honorary. Like, Travis Kelce. I don't think Travis is either, but, you know, they're there a lot.
Wow. Well, they haven't come into the archives where I work.
That's crazy. I can't believe... I wonder why.
This was supposed to be a joke. I did not actually want to talk about this at all. So let's swiftly move along. Nathan, I have just returned. 10 minutes ago, I have just returned from the long walk.
Oh.
The movie. I didn't participate.
Yeah.
I think it was imperfect.
Oh, man.
Like so many movies.
Yeah.
I think it was a stab at some very challenging material, which is not to say that I didn't like it. I did enjoy it overall, and there were some flashes of true brilliance, I felt. But the movie's very overstated. It's very in-your-face about what it's about. What it's about, frankly, it can be summed up in a few pretty generic platitudes about freedom and loving the little things in life. I think that this is probably the movie's approach to characterizations probably best exemplified, and this is not really a spoiler, because I'm going to talk about it in fairly vague terms, but if you don't want to hear anything at all, right, skip ahead a few minutes. But this one character who's spent the entire movie being fairly taciturn, cold, logical, at a point in the movie is asked, like, why don't you say something human? Why don't you be human for once? And he replies, and I'm paraphrasing here, you're right. Maybe it is better to be human. And then he goes on an emotional monologue. And, right, you don't, I didn't need him to say, you're right. I'm going to be human now. All I needed to know that he was making this movement was the emotional monologue. But that kind of thing is not infrequent throughout the movie. But still, I would say worth watching. It does about as well as you can do with a movie that, right, by virtue of its plot, cannot have scene changes, really.
Yeah.
Or changes of setting. Some great performances. David Johnson is in it. And I think between this and Alien Romulus, he could make a career out of grasping the quality of slick but uneven feature horror movies and single-handedly pulling it up by entire letter grades.
Interesting.
Because he's great. He's definitely the best part of this movie, like he was in Alien Romulus.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's a lot, and I'm still thinking about it, but generally, right, some good stuff in there. I would say it's worth watching. It changes, makes some changes to the ending, which is good, because all the jokes you've heard about Stephen King endings are, and I say this as a Stephen King defender, 100% true.
Dang. Well, that's neat. I'm glad it was decent. I'm probably not gonna go and see it, because I don't really care about Stephen King. I'm
also,
a Stephen
too
King
much
hanger.
Poop stuff. Too much poop. There's some graphic shots of people letting her rip, which I don't think. Well, right, you're walking. You have to just pull your pants down and go for it right there on the road.
That's such a stupid thing to focus on. Like, obviously, whatever. Now I'm especially not gonna watch it. But I don't have a.
That's the kind of thing that Stephen King includes in his books.
Yeah, I was gonna say that
to show, like, oh, it's hardcore.
That sounds like the kind of nonsense Stephen King would include. Yeah, I don't really have anything to banter about here besides, I think next week, One Battle After Another, PTA's newest movie. It's receiving rave reactions. Everyone's saying that it's going to be a front runner for the Oscars. This could be PTA's Oppenheimer or The Departed, in the sense that it's a beloved director, maybe finally getting all the way there. I mean, he's been nominated for so many different movies. I'm excited for it. I'm probably going to try to find some time to go see it as soon as I possibly can, as soon as it comes out. Elliot, I don't think I've talked to you this much about this. Are you excited at all for this movie?
I don't know. What's the most recent PTA movie I've seen? The Phantom Thread.
Yeah, Phantom Thread.
Which, I mean, wasn't bad, but wasn't great.
I'm not a huge Phantom Thread guy, but Licorice Pizza I did really enjoy. And honestly, I don't know if there's any PTA movie that I hate. There's quite a few that I think are overrated by a fair margin. As we talked about in our episode on There Will Be Blood, I don't think it's all that in a bag of chips, but I'm excited for this new one. I'm probably going to go see it.
Anyway, did we talk about the trailer for Anemone when it was released?
No. What would I haven't seen it. I don't care about it.
Really?
I know Daniel Day-Lewis is like everyone's. They love salivating about how great he is, and this might be controversial. I just don't care. And I don't think I've ever seen a Daniel Day movie where I loved the movie. I don't think he's an untalented actor.
What about In the Name
actor.
Of the Father?
It's a good movie. I wouldn't say I love it.
Oh, man.
What's the Daniel Day-Lewis movie you love?
Probably There Will Be Blood.
Oh.
I also am partial to Lincoln.
I haven't seen Lincoln. Maybe I would love it, but I kind of doubt it.
Well, I've seen the trailer for Anemone, and I think it looks all right.
Great. So I hope it is all right. I hope he wins another Oscar or something, so he can become the most... Isn't it? He's won 3 times, right? So if he wins again, he's tied with Katharine Hepburn for the most acting wins. I believe.
I don't know.
All right, no one's good. We're not going to fact check that. We're just going to move on to talking about the movie. Elliot, I'm actually very excited to talk about this movie with you, because for a bunch of reasons, but why don't you introduce our listening audience to this movie? What is the deal? Why did you pick this?
Today, we are talking about The Matrix Reloaded. This is the sequel to The Matrix. Came out in 2003, 4 years after the original Matrix came out and changed movies. And that's not a controversial opinion. That's not an exaggeration. Or at least I don't think so. Nathan I don't know what you, what your reading is, but I think that The Matrix is widely agreed to have been a paradigm-shifting moment for movies, at least mainstream movies.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably inevitable that the Wachowskis would take a stab at a sequel, and they did, the same year that Return of the King came out, and Harry Potter was in its early runs,
mm-hmm.
and weren't the prequels also doing their thing in this time period?
2003 would have been pretty close to the release of one of them, because Phantom Menace was 99, so presumably Attack of the Clones was 2001, 2003, probably Revenge of the Sith, yeah.
Revenge of the Sith was in 2005, but still.
Oh, never mind.
What I'm saying is that this movie came out, it had some competition.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is... The Matrix sequels, I don't think any of them are beloved, and certainly none of them are as beloved as the original.
Yeah.
And really, I've already seen this movie, and I wanted us to go and look at a sequel to a movie that we've watched and we've reviewed, and maybe this sequel we're not as familiar with or as fond of.
Mm.
And I thought that The Matrix, right, this touchstone of cinema, was the perfect option.
Sure.
So, yeah. Nathan, I'm very interested to hear what you thought of this, because this is your first time watching.
Yeah, and I'm really conflicted. Coming into this episode, I can honestly say I haven't fully landed on what my score is going to be, on how I fully feel about this movie, because I think there's so many pieces of this that are really interesting, that represent a really compelling sort of direction, that clearly represent some talented artists taking a big swing and doing something very novel and creative with an already very novel and creative franchise. I just don't know if all of it lands. I don't know if all of it works. I especially don't know if all of it is justified. This movie is almost 2.5 hours long, which for my money is way too long for an action-centric film. I think though you gotta get in to the 2-hour margin, if not shorter than that. And yeah, some of the stuff in this is just, I guess, interesting in a way where I'm like, wow, it's crazy that someone like thought of that, wrote it, and then filmed it and put it in a movie, and everyone was just fine with it. No one was like, dude, that, what on earth are you talking about? So I'm interested to talk about this. Yeah, like you said, none of the Matrix sequels are as beloved, and I think the general consensus is they all kind of are stupid, pseudo-philosophical nonsense. And so, you know, I consider myself an expert on pseudo-philosophical nonsense, so I'm very excited to talk about this.
Well, that is not the reaction I was expecting from you.
Wow.
I'm in a more negative place.
Okay.
I don't hate this. Not at all. Not even close to it. I think that it's fine, right? There's some fun to be had, some cool action stuff, some nice performances, some good CGI, especially for 2003. This is pretty good.
Some bad CGI too.
And some bad CGI. I think to give you kind of a picture of how I feel about this movie, I watched this for the first time at the beginning of the summer, and this movie ends on a fairly substantial cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And I still haven't gotten around to watching the third one.
You still haven't seen it?
No. So that's kind of what we're dealing with here.
That's crazy, because I was thinking when I watched it, when I got to the end of this one, I was like, oh, I got to go out and rent the net. Like, I got to find a way to watch the next one as soon as possible, because I want to know, do they stick any sort of landing, or is the third one just, like, atrocious?
I don't think very many people like the third one.
Oh, no.
Which is part of why I haven't invested time in watching it yet. But we'll review the third one some other time, all right? For now, let's review The Matrix Reloaded. We need to reload our save.
Yeah.
Gosh, where to begin? See, I was the one who chose this. I should have had a better game plan.
I would like to begin with some of the positives of stuff. You said you didn't hate everything, and I think as we go on, we can get into some of the negatives, but I'd love to hear what were some of the things that you liked about this movie.
Hugo Weaving.
Oh, interesting.
Really? So I guess you disagree.
Genuinely.
Hugo Weaving, as distinct from Agent Smith, who I have different feelings about.
Okay. All right. That's interesting, because I was thinking the biggest thing for me that I'm like, unequivocally, I love this, is Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus. I love in this movie. I think his character arc, not character arc, his character is so interesting. His steadfast belief in Neo as the one, in the prophecy that the Oracle has given him, I think is so great. I love his little quippy retorts to the guy. I think he gets, in my opinion, the coolest action moment when he dodges the twins' car and cuts it open and then blows it up. That's so sick. Not to mention when he's fighting with the agent on top of the car. I think he's just, for me, he's the best part of this movie by a mile. And I thought this was going to be one of those times where you say, oh, my favorite part was this. And I get to be like, oh my goodness, that was my favorite part. But no, what did you like about Hugo Weaving in this?
Well, I just think that he understands the assignment. Agent Smith has gone full theatrical mustache-twirling villain in this movie, and he's selling it. He is making it work barely. I really like his... I don't know. I just like his theatrical, cold one-liners. Like when he surprises the other agent, and the agent is like, you, and Smith says, yes, me, and then he absorbs the agent, and he's like, me, and then his new Smith self says, me too. I think that's great.
Wow, we're landed in different places on this. This is like you talking about how much you love Mola Rama again.
Oh, shut up about that. You know what, it's more like you saying you enjoy James Bond's "I did what I did for King and Country" line. That's what it's really like.
That's a great line.
It's not. It's not. I don't disagree with you about Morpheus. If you cast your mind back to our review of The Matrix 1, I think we both agreed that Morpheus is so much better than Neo in that movie. Like, he's so much cooler. Keanu Reeves, God bless him, great guy, very down to earth. Not a very good actor. Yeah. Surely we can all see this. We can see past our appreciation of him as a person and understand we are not dealing with
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yes, we are not dealing with Daniel Day-Lewis here, but Lawrence Fishburne has the gravitas, he has the presence. I liked him less in this movie. Hmm. Not because of anything that he's doing wrong, I don't think, but because, in general, a lot of the characters in this movie feel like they're in a holding pattern. Agent Smith feels like he's in a holding pattern in this movie, because we don't really know what his deal is or what his ultimate endgame is. He just kind of shows up a few times and has a fight with Neo, and he does his little lines, and they're great lines. They're Shakespeare these lines that Smith has. But the character himself, he's just not really doing anything. Yeah. And Morpheus is kind of in the same vein. Like, he's doing a lot of reacting, but he's not making a lot of stuff happen. Which I think is down to another problem of the movie, that there's a bit of the and-then storytelling going on.
Yeah.
But I definitely agree that Morpheus is probably the best human character in the movie. And it is more... it's more engaging for me to watch Morpheus struggle against an agent than to watch Neo effortlessly take care of 1,000 Agent Smiths.
Especially when it looks like a poor early 2000s video game cutscene.
And that.
Oh, man. I guess I wanted us to be talking about things that were positives. Did you... I agree. I guess I don't really agree on Agent Smith. I find his theatrics to be silly, and I don't remember him being that silly in the first one. So it kind
he
of...
wasn't. He absolutely wasn't.
Well, so it kind of feels like a dumbing down of the character, which is frustrating. But yeah, no one else. This movie, I think, definitely it suffers from a bit of that and then. But I think it also suffers hugely from it being part one of two. Apparently, The Matrix Revolutions, the third movie in this trilogy, released like 6 months after this one. So presumably, these two movies were filmed at basically the same time and then released very closely together. And you can tell that this one is clearly supposed to be a companion piece to another film, because so many things go nowhere in this movie, right? Link, I think is his name, the pilot of the Nebuchadnezzar. His whole stuff with his wife and her wanting him to come back, none of that goes anywhere, because once they leave Zion, he's basically just sitting in a chair doing nothing. Like, he's never under any real threat from anyone. And, yeah, Neo kind of has a bit of a character arc, but he's, as we've already mentioned, he's played with a worthy amount of effort from Keanu Reeves. But he's not helped by the fact that a lot of what Neo is doing in this movie is listening to people pontificate at him about the illusion of choice and the free will that people have or whatever. In way too wordy monologues. The ridiculously wordy. And then, yeah, Trinity doesn't really have anything to do besides eventually get killed. She does get one cool scene where she blows up that thing with a motorcycle, but otherwise she's just kind of there.
A motorcycle packed with TNT.
Yeah, dude, she had TNT. And that's pretty much everything. I don't know. There's other side characters who are introduced who I assume are more important in the third, such as Nairobi, who is, I guess,
Nairobi.
More...
Nairobi?
Is that what her name is?
It's Niobe. Niobe. Where's this R coming from?
My bad. That's especially embarrassing because I watched this movie with subtitles, so I should have known how it was spelled. But she doesn't really have anything to do, and... yeah, it feels like there's a lot of setup here for another movie, and very little... it kind of feels like watching The Desolation of Smaug or something, where it's so clearly not the end of the story, but they're having to build to an ending because they can't have the movie be, you know, 4 hours long.
True. What are some other things that you like? So I guess I'll say that, well, I don't know. Again, like, the movie's very uneven. Like, mm-hmm. there's good mixed in with bad. For example, action, right? The Matrix church is built upon the rock of stylish kung fu action and bullet time. And there is that in this movie. There's so much of that in this movie, and it's good. But sometimes it's great, like when Morpheus is fighting. But when Neo is fighting, it just lasts a long time. The first fight with Agent Smith, that goes on for a while, man.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help that Neo is unkillable, as far as I'm concerned, right now. Or certainly he displays he's not injured. He never really betrays any sense of fear or uncertainty. So it's kind of hard to get invested with these fights because, yeah, there's a million Agent Smiths, but if Neo can take all these punches without even flinching, without even having a shadow of a bruise on him, what am I supposed to say? But I do think they kind of compensate for this sometimes, like, for example, when the Merovingian, who I do not like, has his little people fight Neo for a while, and Neo uses, everyone gets melee weapons like axes and spears and swords and stuff. And that, I like that because it's not much, but it is different. It's different than him just jumping up in the air and kicking people in the face. So I think that worked, and it's good. It's an entertaining action scene. A lot of the action scenes are entertaining. The freeway scene, it's pretty good. Did you know that apparently, I did not know this, the Wachowskis built like a mile of freeway to film this on?
Yes, I did know
that's
that.
Pretty impressive. I guess that's why it's got those giant walls on the side, so they don't have to CG in background and stuff. But yeah, that scene's good. It's punchy, and there's lots of explosions, and Morpheus wins a fight with a car, which is stupid, but very cool.
Yeah.
Don't make me regret this.
Yeah, it is cool. But I agree with you. A lot of the action scenes take way too long. It feels like I'm watching a Zack Snyder movie with how much slow-mo is in here. Holy cow. Not to mention, some of the bullet time only serves to... Some of the fight scenes feel like they're undercutting their own seriousness. Like, the bullet time at the beginning, where Neo is having his first vision of Trinity being shot, the only thing I was thinking that entire bullet time is, good grief, Trinity sucks at shooting. She's shooting so many bullets and can't hit this guy for nothing. I'm sure it's difficult to hit someone when you're, like, falling out of a building backwards or whatever. But, like, that shouldn't be a problem for the agent. And the agent's also having an atrociously difficult job shooting them. And, yeah, that fight between Neo and all the Agent Smiths, I just could not take it seriously. It lasted so long. And it's not even like Neo is killing any of them. So they just keep, there just keeps being more and more Agent Smiths. Eventually, too many to have actual extras. And so they start just CGIing the entire thing. And it looks, I don't think I can overstate this, it looks terrible. It looks so bad. And it does look like a really bad video game cutscene. Well, actually, for 2003, that would be a decent video game cutscene. But for 2025, that's a horrible video game cutscene. And it's just silly, because eventually I'm like, you know, where are all these people coming from? And how has the Matrix not figured, how have the machines not figured out already? Like, yo, Agent Smith has corrupted 400 people. Surely that's a noticeable amount of people to be, to have like funky code on them or something. Which I'm just going to touch on this briefly. We're not going to dive too deep into this because it's pointless. But I will say, this movie's over-explaining of certain aspects of the Matrix only serves to further confuse what on earth is going on technologically and literally in the Matrix. Like, the Oracle saying that some people are just programs running in the Matrix, how on earth are there errant programs? Like, they act like the key maker is, like, catching him is a big deal because he's loose. But if he's a program, why can't they just go to wherever, like, if it's all code, shouldn't they be able to just find where that code is and delete it? Why do they have to find him in the Matrix in order to delete it? It doesn't make any sense to me. And it doesn't help that the movie keeps trying to explain what doesn't make sense in a way that still doesn't make sense.
I think these might be problems inherent with the concept of a computer world.
I mean, yeah, because I think I asked the same thing about Tron, where I was like, what's actually happening here?
I don't know. I don't know. So what is it about this movie that you like, aside from Morpheus and some of the action?
Well, I think the movie is very interesting, right? We talked about with the first one, or at least I assume we talked about it, because it's very evident, right, that the movie has some sort of philosophical implications, right? Allegedly, the Wachowskis made people read Plato's Allegory of the Cave when making the movie to help explain to them pieces of the film's plot. This movie makes a similar attempt to have some philosophical points. I saw personally two specific points. They made the first one about the illusion or appearance of free will and choice, and then a second one kind of tied into that one, kind of pointing out that this battle between the machines and the humans is innately self-destructive, because neither side can really destroy the other one, per se. And I think that one is super weak. It's only really present in the conversation Neo has with the council member at the beginning of the movie, and then comes up again when Neo talks to the architect.
Colonel Sanders.
No, he doesn't look anything like Colonel Sanders. Elliot, he looks really cool, and he's an awesome, good character. Apparently, he was supposed to be played by Sean Connery. Imagine trying to understand not only the nonsense jargon the architect is saying, but if it was said in a thick Scottish accent.
Concordedly, Neo. the extinction of your species.
Yeah, that would be so great. Anyway, the other stronger philosophical aspect to this movie that I do find interesting is this conversation about choice and free will. That at the beginning, near the beginning, the council member says, I think it's the council member, says that choice is an illusion that the people in power give to the people with no power. And then at the
end,
that's
what the Merovingian says.
Whatever. He's saying, he's banging on about the same stuff about choice and free will. And this, at the very least, I do find mildly interesting. And so I think that goes a long way for me. I believe I've said before that if a movie is interesting, it gets a lot of distance for me, because I'm able to sit and think and I'm engaged with the movie because I'm wondering how it's going to address the ideas that it's presenting. And I do think the movie somewhat delivers on this in having, right, the climax be Neo being forced to make a choice, and presumably the first time he's genuinely made a choice in the movie, since everything else has been people telling him to go do stuff, and then at the end of the movie he finally has a choice to exert his own free will. But I think that's interesting. I think the movie doubling down on, I don't know, I find all of the scenes in Zion, I find really weird in a way that I find compelling, that they're so bizarre. This is what I'm talking about when someone wrote, have a 7-minute electro rave orgy sort of scene. I mean, that's weird. That's a weird thing to choose to put into a movie that is a very mainstream, huge. This was the most successful R-rated movie up until, like, The Joker or something. Or Passion of the Christ, I think, actually, was what dethroned it. But that's that's just so weird to me. And every time a movie does something that weird, I'm like, well, that's kind of compelling in the sense that that's a weird thing to do.
That makes sense. yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's true that they have these conversations about that.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that Neo making this choice. Choice. Is he even making a choice? I'm not so sure that that's a resolution to this thread. Hmm. I don't know. I like the idea that freedom or the fight for freedom, the war for freedom, could be used, could be employed as a method of control. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm just kind of extrapolating that from the movie. I'm doing the movie's work for it, which, of course, I don't approve of. And it doesn't help that a lot of this is predicated on exactly what you were talking about, some just nonsense about the Matrix and how it works. And the more Colonel Sanders tries to explain how the Matrix works, the more I'm like, dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I did want to ask, even want to take a stab at what on earth he was talking about there.
Well, he's saying that because humans have free will or want free will, this somehow translates into the Matrix being imperfect.
Yeah.
That they're the of free will or the desire for free will necessarily, I don't know, corrupts the code. Again, like, we're talking about a computer code, so this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But so if you give people a choice, oh my gosh, I don't know.
That's what I was getting to. I think you're right so far.
If you give people a choice, and I'm not sure how they're supposed to be giving people a choice in the Matrix, then they will... Well, no, it's not that you have to allow for that choice, but that choice inevitably creates instability in the Matrix that sort of snowballs until the entire thing collapses. So the Matrix can never be permanent, because there's no perfect form of control, something like that.
Yeah.
And so the One was created specifically to, like, this is where it gets really weird. The One was created specifically to embody the code, the, like, natural and perfect code of the Matrix. And when the One rejoins with the Source, that fixes things somehow.
Yeah, well, and this is where I think it kind of falls apart, because obviously at the end of the movie, Neo controls the machines in the real world. Somehow him being in the Source allows him to take, like, the ability to Bluetooth connect to the machines into the real world, and then use that to destroy them. That's some timey-wimey nonsense, in my opinion.
Here's what Wikipedia says.
Oh boy.
Neo meets a program called the Architect, the creator of the Matrix, who explains that, as the One, Neo is an intentional part of the design of the Matrix, which is now in its sixth iteration. Neo was meant to stop the Matrix's fatal system crash that naturally recurs due to humans' free will, leading to dozens of humans gradually refusing to accept the simulation. So I don't understand this. If he stops the Matrix from crashing, why does Zion need to exist and be continuously destroyed over and over again?
I don't think Zion needs to exist. I think it's just the fact that as the Matrix goes on, more and more people see the unreality of the Matrix and break out of it. So just Zion naturally is created over the course of...
No, because the Architect says that Neo's job, after he merges with the Source code or whatever, is to choose new people to repopulate Zion, implying that the machines have a vested interest in the maintenance, the creation and the maintenance of Zion, or, right, people outside of the Matrix.
This is what I'm going to assume, and this is an assumption where I'm giving a good faith argument for the movie, is that the machines want to, because they know people will break out of the Matrix, they want to be able to control where and how those people break out. And so they let him create a new Zion so that they can control where those people are going, as opposed to just letting the people, when they break out, to genuinely create an underground movement that the machines have no ability to, like, find or destroy.
That's my assumption. Reason to think that? Or is, like, is there any textual evidence for this?
No, it just may, I mean, that's what I would do if I was machines trying to control humans.
Well, the point is that A, it's not very well explained, and B, all of this is predicated on just some made-up stuff about the Matrix, some very woolly, vague, nebulous world building about the Matrix itself.
Well, and I think what's especially bad about this movie in comparison to the first Matrix is that the first Matrix, anyone can watch it and enjoy it as an action movie, and then they can also, right, if they dive deeper into it, they can enjoy some of these philosophical aspects that we talked about when we reviewed it. I don't think The Matrix Reloaded works on the same way. I don't think you can enjoy it as a purely action movie, because every action sequence is bookended by lengthy, obtuse, completely, like, stone block walls of text being thrust at you by people, you know, just going on and on about things that, as we've already covered here, right, are tough to decipher, are tough to untangle and find any sort of deeper meaning in it. And so you can't really enjoy it as a pure action movie. And then I don't think the philosophy and the ideas and themes that they're trying to play with are presented in a simple enough way that most people could enjoy it in as a thematic or more interesting sort of thing. I mean, a lot of the positive reviews that I read of this movie, I got to the end of the review and I was like, I'm pretty sure you're making some of this up, or like you did shrooms and then watched the movie and reviewed it based on like what the shrooms made you think while watching the movie. That this is one of the few times, Ellie, I'm going to agree with you that there's not a lot of textual evidence that The Matrix Reloaded is any of the things that the positive reviews of The Matrix Reloaded says it is. I mean, I saw a bunch of these saying it's a subversion of the first Matrix. In what way? In how on earth is it a subversion of the first Matrix? You can't just throw out words you've seen in New York Times reviews of things and make and expect that any of that would make sense.
Well, I obviously think you're right. And again, I do like the idea broadly of the idea that Neo, the One, is the One and the prophecy. This is all manufactured. But then the movie kind of has it both ways when Neo then goes out into the real world, excuse me, and controls the machines. I mean, regardless of invented prophecies and ones and stuff, he's still clearly special in a way that no one else is. So the chosen one trope seems like it emerges from this relatively intact.
Yeah.
I also want to say that that's the image, the comparison between these scenes and just blocks of text is perfect. because these scenes are inert. Nothing is happening in them. I mean, the Merovingian is serving this woman cake that... It's so stupid.
That's another moment that I'm like, someone wrote that and was like, dude, you would not believe how much I cooked while writing my script today. It is amazing.
That's like, if you're so smart, how are you so dead?
Yeah.
But it really comes through the problem with these scenes that right after that, so, right, Trinity, Neo, and Morpheus, a side note, predicating Neo's whole choice on this relationship between him and Trinity, that was a bad idea because the chemistry is not distant. But anyway, they go to the Merovingian to ask him for the Keymaker, and he refuses. He spends a long time talking, and then he refuses. And then in the elevator, they're like, what happened? And I was like, you didn't do anything. You didn't even offer an explanation or try to convince him to give you the Keymaker. You just sat there and stared at him while he was giving his lecture. Why are you surprised?
Yeah, I did want to ask, because you're a little bit more well-read than me. All of these characters, or a lot of these characters, have names that are steeped in some sort of religious or Greek sort of mythology, right? Morpheus, I believe, is the god of sleep. Zion, obviously, is the traditional name for Jerusalem. Persephone is the wife of Hades, typically, in Greek mythology. Is Merovingian something that I just don't know because I'm stupid?
I don't know. I don't think it matters because this guy has... Let us not forget that this guy has werewolves or vampires in his service.
That's the other thing that I found really disappointing, is because they set up the idea that, like, vampires are real, they're just an errant program or something, and then they deliver on it in the sense that, yeah, Persephone kills the one guy with a silver bullet. And so when they were getting ready to fight Neo, I was like, oh. And especially after the twins went like Wraith mode or whatever, I thought Neo's fight with these other guys was going to be like insane, that they were going to get fangs, they were going to turn into werewolves, and it was just going to be an insane Neo versus, right, horrible, the Universal Monster Company. And instead, it was just him whacking some people with prop swords.
I mean, he didn't even fight the twins, which I was really surprised by. Because at this point in Neo's powers, it seems like he should be going up against these kinds of people, right?
Yeah.
He shouldn't just be engaging in fisticuffs. He should be engaging people who have more to offer him.
Yeah.
And that includes Smith, because Smith just has fisticuffs. Smith can't do anything special.
He can do the chest thing.
It's true. Me.
That's so stupid.
But that's not very exciting to see Neo resist. It would be exciting if Neo had to get around these twins' powers.
Yeah.
Rather than just be like, ugh, and get out of the assimilation program thing.
Yeah.
Also, no, we didn't even talk about how Smith can now possess people in the real world.
Yeah, see, that's the first sign that code from the Matrix can somehow get into the real world. I am not sure about the mechanics of this. When it showed Bane going into the real world through a phone, I was like, I don't think that's how that works, dude. I mean, I guess you wrote it, so you would know better than me. But, I don't really have any other notes here, if you're ready to get into some ratings.
I mean, the music is fine. It's not something I would listen to casually. This movie's got a lot of film grain. It's pretty excessive. But again, this is the early 2000s. They love film grain.
They did.
I just want to say, I do appreciate that the movie is taking a swing, right? Yeah. I don't think that this is a well, parts of this movie are not very innovative, like the action. But in general, I don't think that this is a lazy cash-in sequel where...
No.
I don't think this is a remake of the first Matrix, right? They're trying to expand, yeah. They're trying to do something new. They're even trying to play around with what the Matrix is and means. And I do appreciate that, even if it didn't always or didn't even often work very well, in my view.
Yeah, I agree. I think The Matrix Reloaded is going to be my new standard response when I see people talk about mainstream movies and say something like, oh my goodness, the Barbie movie is so crazy. Like, this is the craziest mainstream movie ever. For my money, The Matrix Reloaded is the craziest movie that made huge amounts of money. So many parts of this movie are just nuts. Anyway, I think you've kind of talked me down a little bit in terms of my rating. Like you said, this is clearly not a cash grab. This is clearly some people making an effort to make some sort of artistic statement. I just don't think it all comes through. I think the action scenes are good. They're enjoyable. They go on a little too long. The dialogue scenes are mildly interesting, but they are tough to get through. I'm going to give it a 6.4 out of 10.
Very interesting. I think this movie's okay. It's got some moments. I appreciate the swings that it's taking. I don't think a lot of them land. I enjoy the action. I enjoy Morpheus. I enjoy Hugo Weaving. This is a cool, interesting world. It's a well-made movie. I mean, no, right? It's slick. It's well-produced is what I'm saying. But in the end, it's kind of a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing for me. That you've got these lengthy disquisitions about choice and free will, but the movie struggles to bind all of that in real narrative moments. Trinity and Neo. They're not great. I don't even disagree with the idea that, right, love is a powerful force that the machines struggled to contend with, and Neo's love for Trinity is so overwhelming that it's the one thing that could throw a wrench into these cold, calculating, robotic machines' plans. It's just this love, in particular, is nothing. I'm going to stop talking before I talk myself down anymore. I'm going to give this a C-.
Dang. The whole time there at the end, I was just thinking, love, Tars. Love, Tars.
That's what Neo should have said. Love, Architect, love.
It's the only thing.
Yep.
Anyway, traditionally now we share some recommendations. And my recommendation is going to be, I think I see this a lot where people look at a wildly creative, original American movie and they say, dude, some anime fella made this 6 years ago in Japan or whatever. And sometimes it's close and you're like, I can see why those movies are similar, and sometimes it's not. One example where those movies are pretty similar, but not so similar that I think the Wachowskis ripped this movie off. That's going to be Ghost in the Shell. This is the original animated movie, not the remake with Scarlett Johansson, because good grief, that's a terrible idea. But this is a great movie if you like The Matrix, if you like Blade Runner. I think these are... It's very similar sci-fi worlds to Ghost in the Shell, where it's a very depressing world. It does not look good for the humans in this world. And it follows the titular sort of Shell, who is a cop trying to solve some crimes, and well as discover herself in the course of this. It's got great action. It's got, I mean, it's not the most interesting philosophical movie of all time, but I do think it's so much in the same vein as The Matrix and Blade Runner, where it's just down on their luck cops walking around in the rain while some steampunk nonsense is happening. It's great. The vibes of this movie are insane. If it's raining where you're at, watch this movie and you'll be like, wow, what a great rainy movie. But yeah, it's a really good movie. If you've never seen it, I would recommend it, especially if you liked these Matrix movies.
Very interesting. I count myself among the number of people who have not seen that, although it is on my list.
Good.
My recommendation is going to be Denis Villeneuve's Dune. And I'm considering Dune Part 1 and Part 2 as kind of like one thing here. But if I chose one, I mean, I guess I would choose Dune Part 2, but I'm not sure that works as a standalone movie. The point is, I chose this for... Because if you liked The Matrix generally for just a cool, well-thought-out, dense sci-fi world, and if you liked The Matrix Reloaded's idea of prophecy and rebellion being used as instruments of control, or even just the subversion of the Chosen One trope... Or if you thought that the movie, like me, didn't really do that very well, but want to see it done well elsewhere, I think Dune is fantastic at this. Plus, it's got some very decent action. A lot more grounded, a lot more gritty than The Matrix, but it definitely gets the job done. And holy cow, are these movies a pair of lookers?
It's true. They're great-looking movies. Honestly, if you didn't see them in theaters, that's so sad for you, because they were so great in the movie theater. Holy cow. I can second that. I don't really like the first one so much, but we reviewed the second one, and it's so, so good. Anyway.
Hey, life is hard and full of disappointments. What can I tell you?
Of course. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Send us an email. We love getting emails. We love hearing from you. If you have a request, if you have a comment on something that we've talked about, you know, did you see The Long Walk? Are you excited for it? Are you excited for One Battle After Another? Are you excited for Anemone or whatever that one's called? Send us an email. Let us know. We're going to be back next week with another brand new episode, so look forward to that, and we hope you have a great week in between.